Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are cutting through a lot of the noise you hear about the modern workplace, you know, the burnout, quiet quitting, all of that. And we're going to focus on a solution that really lives with managers, building a genuine coaching culture. So our deep dive today is really anchored in Kim Lee's work, Building a Coaching Culture, The Ripple Effect. And the whole idea here is that coaching is, well, it's more than just a soft skill. It's a real strategic alternative to old school top-down management.
Okay, let's unpack that. I think our mission here is to get past the theory and really pull out this actionable framework Lee calls the ripple effect. We need to see how these small targeted coaching behaviors, these little shifts in how you talk to people every day, can create these huge waves of change. We're going to connect that positive culture stuff directly to, you know, hard metrics and real growth.
That's the perfect place to start. Because before any leader just writes this off as a nice to have, we have to talk about the ROI. We need the numbers.
Exactly. We have to start with the big business question. Does this stuff actually work? Does it deliver financially? And the data, it's overwhelmingly clear. A huge global survey from PricewaterhouseCoopers found that companies saw an average ROI of 7 times their initial investment.
7 times. That one number completely changes the conversation from a perk to a, well, necessary investment. But what drives that kind of return?
It's mainly two things: higher productivity and way better retention. I mean, when you factor those in, a Metrics Global study found the ROI for executive coaching specifically, just it soared to 788%. Just think about that. How many other business initiatives promise anything close to that?
It's incredible. And what about the productivity piece specifically?
Yeah, the data there is just as compelling. So training by itself, that gives you about a 22% productivity boost, which is good. But when you combine that training with one-on-one coaching, you know, to help apply it, that number jumps to 88%. It's the difference between knowing something and actually doing it.
And you can see that flowing straight to the bottom line, right? Across the whole company.
Oh, absolutely. The sources show that organizations with strong coaching cultures, they report 47% higher revenue per employee.
47%.
And on top of that, 27% year-over-year revenue growth compared to their peers. It's a clear strategic advantage.
So it's an offensive strategy for growth, but it's also a defensive one.
A mandatory defensive strategy. Yeah. I mean, think about churn. Coaching actively defends against turnover. Some programs show a 28% reduction in turnover rates. And when you think that replacing one employee can cost anywhere from half to, you know, 2 times their annual salary.
And coaching isn't an expense.
It's an insurance policy against these crippling costs.
Okay, that completely reframes the why. The numbers are just undeniable. So if it's mandatory, the next question is, can we actually do it? Is coaching some innate talent, or is it a skill you can learn?
The source material is very, very clear on this. It is a learned set of behaviors, and it's all built on this mindset of seeing potential that others don't. I love the author's story about her old swimming coach, Coach Zirzo, who saw something in her before she even had any experience. That belief is the starting point.
That mindset shift is, it's profound, moving from fixing deficits to unlocking potential. But when you look at the real world, great coaches don't all look the same, do they?
Not at all.
Yeah.
And the sports examples in the book are fascinating. You take someone like Bill Belichick. He's authoritative, system-driven. His whole mantra is do your job. He creates greatness through discipline and flawless execution.
Right. And then you have the complete opposite, like Andy Reid. He's known for being the super collaborative, player-centric teacher. He builds these incredible relationships and uses a player's leadership committee to empower his team. It's all about creativity.
And then there's a third way, like Pat Summitt. The ultimate standard setter, that tough love approach. But her whole system worked because it was rooted in this absolute commitment to her players' lives. I mean, a 100% graduation rate for eligible players says it all.
So you can be successful with totally different styles. But, and this is a key question, does that Belichick style work everywhere? When does that approach actually hurt a team?
That's a critical point. The sources really suggest that while you have to be authentic, that rigid, authoritative style can, you know, it can really stifle creativity, creates compliance, not real commitment. So the framework has to be adaptable, but it's built on 3 core universal skills that anyone can learn.
Okay, what's the first one?
The first is active listening. And this isn't just not talking. It's hearing the message, the meaning, and the emotion behind the words. Being fully present. That's how you spot the little signs of disengagement that most managers miss.
And you can learn how to show you're listening right with simple things like paraphrasing. you know, saying something like, okay, so if I'm hearing you right, you're frustrated because the timeline changed and that meant you had to work all weekend. You validate the feeling.
Exactly. The second skill is powerful questioning. This is the art of guiding discovery instead of just giving the answer. It shifts the ownership to the employee.
So instead of asking, why didn't you finish that?
Right. Yeah. You ask something like, what have you tried so far? Or maybe, how can we approach this differently next time to avoid this?
And the sources are really clear on this next part. You have to get comfortable with the silence after you ask.
Yes. That silence is where the work happens. If you jump in, you've robbed them of the chance to think.
Mm.
And the third skill is constructive feedback. The book really champions the SBI model. Situation, behavior, impact.
Let's break that down because SBI is so useful for keeping feedback objective.
So you start with the situation.
During the client meeting this morning.
Then the specific observable behavior.
When the proposal was 2 minutes late.
And then you explain the impact.
We had to rush the presentation, which made us look unprepared. It's about the action, not the person. It's about growth.
Precisely. And once you have those skills, you can move to the next level. Situational coaching. You have to adapt. You know, coaching a high-potential go-getter is totally different from coaching a dedicated manager who's on the edge of burnout and needs to learn to delegate.
And that adaptation becomes even more critical when you look at the different generations in the workplace. They all receive feedback so differently.
Totally. Let's start with Generation X. They value independence, right? Yeah. They want direct, concise feedback. If you give them a lot of praise, they might just see it as micromanagement.
Whereas millennials, they grew up expecting a lot more feedback. And for them, it's directly tied to their development. They need to understand the why behind it.
And then you've got Gen Z digital natives. They expect feedback to be immediate, transparent, and in real time, often through like a quick digital tool. The annual review is already ancient history to them.
And that's just one layer of complexity. The sources also talk about the huge challenges of cross-cultural coaching.
Yeah, the author's experience with her team in India is a perfect example in what are called high-context cultures. Like in India, the relationship comes first, always.
So if you skip the small talk, asking about family, the weekend.
You're not just being rude. You're skipping the trust-building step. And without that trust, any kind of honest feedback is basically impossible.
So the key is to slow down.
So slow down, connect, and just ask them directly. How do you prefer to receive feedback? You have to adapt your tools to the culture.
Okay, so we've covered the skills, the adaptation. Now let's get into those really high-stakes moments. The author calls them the brave and the broken.
The first one is coaching through ambiguity and innovation. The book talks about the Power School acquisition, where the team was literally building the plane while flying it.
Right. The author shows up to a new job, no computer, and has to onboard 100 people into a system that doesn't even exist yet. In that kind of chaos, traditional management, where the leader is supposed to have all the answers, it just falls apart.
It's useless. A coach's job in that moment is just one thing: create psychological safety.
The feeling that failure isn't fatal, it's information.
Exactly. And you build that with these tiny habits. The book mentions things like Way to Go Wednesdays to celebrate small wins, or micro-risks check-ins to make experimentation feel normal.
Then you have the other side of it, coaching through the breakdown, the personal crises.
And the example here of the author's manager, Dawn, during COVID is just, it's so powerful. Her son was having serious health issues, and Dawn didn't talk about deadlines. She didn't adjust productivity metrics. She just focused on, in the author's words, protecting my humanity.
That's real leadership. That one act builds a kind of loyalty that no bonus ever could.
And it's not just for crises. Even coaching through a breakthrough, like a promotion, is critical. Success is a disruption, too.
So the focus shifts from reassuring them to helping them reflect.
Right. You ask questions like, who do you want to be as a leader in this new role?
And to really bring home the power of these human moments, we have to talk about the story of Joy and the office walls.
Ah, yes. So the author, after surviving layoffs, kept her office walls completely bare. It was this unconscious monument to fear.
Mm-hmm.
And her teammate, Joy, and the rest of the team, they noticed. And without a word, they just came in one day and decorated her office.
It was this nonverbal signal.
The ultimate signal. It said, you belong here, you are safe. And that feeling of belonging, that's the foundation for everything else.
Wow. Okay, that brings us to the final inflection point, which feels maybe the most urgent for leaders right now. Artificial intelligence.
Yeah. Leaders have to coach curiosity over fear here. They need to frame AI as a co-pilot, not a replacement. But there's a huge strategic warning in the source material about this. If companies use AI to just eliminate all their entry-level roles for efficiency,
you create a massive talent gap down the line.
Exactly. It's like harvesting all the adult plants from your garden, but never planting any new seeds. In 5 or 10 years, you'll have no one ready to lead.
So our development focus has to shift completely. It has to be about the things that AI can't do. The book calls them the 4 C's.
Right. The first C is complex problem solving. That's coaching human judgment, making tough calls when the data isn't clear. The second is connection, real human empathy, building the kind of trust and psychological safety we've been talking about.
The third is creativity. That's strategic thinking, generating brand new ideas that an AI, which is trained on the past, could never come up with. And the fourth C is coaching itself, the mentorship, the inspiration, guiding people through their careers.
And this all comes with a big ethical warning label. You have to coach a trust but verify mindset with AI. You don't want to be the person whose legacy is defined by, as the author says, letting a robot convince you to put a tariff on penguins because it was hallucinating.
That is a perfect way to put it. So what does all of this mean for you, our listener? I think the core conclusion from this deep dive is that this ripple effect, it's a real measurable force. It builds resilience. It unlocks innovation. It secures loyalty. It's not optional anymore. It's a strategic imperative.
Absolutely. And the legacy of a coaching culture is that it outlasts any one person. The author talks about her colleague, Jenna, who carried that spirit of authenticity and connection forward. Those positive ripples just keep going. That's what becomes the enduring culture of a team. So we'll leave you with a direct challenge. The sources show that AI is automating repetitive work, and that's freeing up your time. The question is, what are you going to do with that time? What intentional time-blocked commitment will you make this week to invest in one of those 4 C's? Connection, creativity, complex problem-solving, or coaching to amplify your team's humanity. Think about that one investment.